You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Today's podcast is brought to you in association with Athletic Greens, the place to get 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole foods, soy superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens. But don't take my word for it. Take the word of my esteemed colleague for it, because not only did he start the journey with Athletic Greens as a dad bod, he has now turned himself into a beach god. Nicholas, pray tell, how did you do that?
Well, as a lot of the listeners will know, I started the year 225 pounds and I wanted to get down to a more healthy, manageable, sexy, beach-ready weight. And, you know, I'm not big on supplements, but I thought, you know what, I'll add a little protein shake in there and I'll also give Athletic Greens a whirl. I think a lot of people, not just my age, but a lot of people in modern day in society, with a lot of processed foods knocking about and everything else, we struggle to get enough fruit and veg into our bodies. I know I probably only have one fruit and veg hit per day. And if you're training, especially if you're trying to get healthy, that's just not enough. So what I found is one little scoop of Athletic Greens in with my protein shake every morning, and you guarantee that you're going to get all those goodies that you would have got from a whole bowl of fruit and veg and everything else. He just started the day on the right foot. And listen, it helped me. But genuinely believe it played a good part in my weight loss program. I continue to use it to this day. And I've got nothing but positive things to say. So yeah, Athletic Greens, man. Get on it, get healthy and get fit with me.
Now, I've no doubt there are people only listening to this advertisement. This is also available in a video format on our YouTube channel. You can see the results yourself. Look at him, the gun show, permanently. He's no longer heavyweight. The lad's down to light heavyweight. Who knows? In a month or two, he might be super middle. Anyway, if you want to look like Nick, thought I'd never ever say that on this podcast, you can get yourself some Athletic Greens yourself, because they are giving you one free year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/fightdisciples. That's us. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/fightdisciples to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. And you get to look like him.
This is Fight Disciples.
Welcome to podcast episode 624. We are the Fight Disciples. This one is all about MMA. It's mainly UFC. There's a little bit of news from other franchises as well that are going to pop up in the next hour or so. But if it's the first time you've ever come to us, we would love to encourage you to subscribe. Or maybe just hold off on that subscribe right now. Listen to the next 60 minutes and then make a decision. But I'll tell you where you can go anyway once you've made that decision. You can get us on iTunes. Fight Disciples is what you're looking for. YouTube. Fight Disciples is also what you're looking for. And our website is fightdisciples.com. Now, pre-show, there's loads to talk about. We're obviously going to review everything that happened in Vegas at the weekend. And we are going to give a little, pay a little bit of homage to the King of Rio. That's right. Jose Aldo, who, I don't think he's officially announced it, but his team have announced their retirement, haven't they? Anyway, we'll get stuck into that in a minute. Pre-show, so just before I hit the record button on this particular program, right, we're having a little bit of a debate of how people consume our show. Now, I approach making this program as a radio program. So audio, that's what I'm concentrating on. I'm concentrating on the audio. So I would imagine, and it's true with where we're currently at with our listening and viewing figures, is that the majority of people listen to the show rather than watch the show. But it's becoming more and more apparent that a lot more people like to watch the programme, of which you are finding as well, Nicholas, with people contacting you saying that I don't necessarily listen, I like to watch. People are using it as an on-demand television programme. When you get in from the end of your day, you've hit your subscribe button, you know that we're there, and then in you go, you lie in bed of the night, and the last faces that you see just before you jerk off are us. Eh?
Weird.
Well, I kind of take it as a little bit of a compliment. however, this conversation then took a little bit of a weird turn, because you've got the builders in at the moment. Not a euphemism, yep. That, is it? You've got the builders in at your gaff, doing a bit of graft at your place. Now,
correct.
You've used YouTube to help you along, and you informed me today that you're not an in-demand YouTube watcher. You are more of a self-help YouTube consumer. Correct. Would you like to elaborate on
how
what
do
you just
build
told
a
me
shed?
A couple minutes ago, which I'm...
How do you sharpen the blades of a chainsaw? You know, how do you unblock a toilet with nothing but a mop? All those type of things. That's what like YouTube is for me. That's that and like UFC.
So how? So
content.
Questions. How? Yeah. How to do something?
How
that's
do I do this? How do I do that? Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But, okay. And what have you asked this morning? What question have you asked this morning to YouTube?
Bear in mind, I'm 45 years of age.
Correct,
this morning, I went on YouTube and said, how do I make a cup of instant coffee?
Instant coffee.
This is weird though, yeah. Instant so on the back of a jar of Doe Egbert's coffee or whatever it's called.
Whoa, that's the big stuff, son. That's £6 a bottle, hey, is that? Hey, what's going on?
On the there's no instructions on the jar. Do you find that weird? There's no instructions on the jar of how you make a cup of coffee. I don't drink coffee. I've never made coffee. I've never been a coffee drinker. Jane isn't. That posh jar of coffee is for when this stuff like this happens. Builders turn up and go, yeah, mate, we'll have three coffees. And I'm like, fuck, Jane's not in. I'm standing there looking at this jar of coffee. And I'm like, I know you've got to boil water. But it doesn't say. It didn't say on it, like, how much coffee to put in. So obviously I had to use Google. And then I was telling you this morning, you're like, it's fucking weird. But I didn't know how many grains you put in. Like, how many grains you need to make one cup.
Oh, my. You're unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Anyway,
mate, this is all you do, right? There you do. For those that didn't know, you're the only person on the planet, mate.
I don't my drink fucking. Coffee.
Mate, my 9-year-old son, my 6-year-old daughter knows how to make a cup of coffee. You take you a scoop, level, put it in, level, you pour in the hot water, teaspoon. Done.
Yeah, well, anyway, in the video it says level teaspoon, which I did, and then mix it with the hot water slowly, so it's all, and then like a cup of tea, put milk into however you like it. So yeah, it was 45 years of age, and that was a life lesson today, courtesy of YouTube.
Now,
I'm glad the builders couldn't see me, because it probably was a bit of an embarrassing moment. So
well. This conversation pre-show then took a further turn, right? So obviously I'm pissing myself at that. A 45-year-old bloke Googling how to make a cup of instant coffee. We're not talking about a machine or any weird contraption. We're talking about taking a scoop out of a jar, putting it in a cup and pouring water on it.
It was more a quantity situation.
Mate, I need to tell you this story about a pot noodle. This is fucking magnificent, right? This is magnificent. So when I was 15 or 16, in the summer holidays, my dad used to work in a factory, right? And he was like a foreman at a factory. And he got me a summer job to do bit all the shit, like cleaning, all that type of stuff. But it was proper grafting. The summer holidays, and basically what it was me to get a few quid so I can go away with my pals, right?
Yeah, I did the same.
Right, so I'm in there 2 weeks, just grafting. But then there were some other young lads in there as well who, I don't know, maybe their dad worked in there as well, and they were doing the same shit as me. So we're all doing the same stuff. Anyway, it was our job to do the butty run or the lunch run, right? So, and there were a lunch van and all this type of shit. So off we went, we take the orders, get the butties in, get the cakes in, come back, everybody had eaten, whatever. But this one day, right, this lad he brought himself a pot noodle, one of the older fellas, he brought himself a pot noodle back. And he gave it to one of these other kids. He said, right, sort me pot noodle out, I'm just finishing job off and I'll come in. Right, no worries. So I've gone off, gone and done Butty Run, brought up Butty's back, put it back. Everybody's come and sit down. And this fella comes back and goes, you got me a pot noodle? He goes, yeah. It's just cooking. it's just being made, yeah. And he's like, didn't think anything of it. Right, okay. Next thing you know, fucking fire alarm's going off. And like, you could smell, it was horrific what you could smell coming out of canteen. What the fuck is going on here? This is mad. Anyway, one of our fellas runs into the kitchen, opens it up, fucking the hob's ablaze. Right? He's like going, what the fuck? So he's fucking spraying it and all this type of shit with bloody fire extinguisher, putting everything out and what have you. On top of the fucking hob is a fucking pot. On top of the hob. He's put the fucking pot noodle on top of the hob and set the fucker on fire.
Fucking tremendous.
We're all like, what the fuck are you doing? You just put hot water in it, lad. Eh? I thought you cooked it. His explanation of how he came to the conclusion of putting it on the hob was amazing, mate. Oh, he's like, going, I'm looking at it. I said, I didn't know what to do. So, you know, I knew I had to take the lid off. Oh, brilliant. But you thought you'd burn plastic. Right. Amazing.
Oh, my God. Pot noodles.
Mate, pot noodles. Mate, just on that. Quick one. Whilst I'm on a roll with this, it's the same lad, this, right? Same lad. In the same 2 week experience, right?
Yeah. Sounds like a
right fuckwit. he got sent to the shop for cigarettes. He got sent to the shop for cigarettes for one of the lads, right? And he goes, let's say he said, if I want Marlboro Lights, right? Get me 20 Marlboro Lights. If they don't have Marlboro Lights, get me out. Right? That was the instruction. I was there when he said it. Get me 20 Marlboro Lights. If they don't have it, get me out. For those that don't know what that means, from my neck of the woods, get me anything. Get me any alternative, right? Benson and Edges, Silk Cut. That's basically what the insinuation was, right? He went to the shop. They obviously didn't have Marlboro Lights, right? He come back with a meat pie and a bottle of Lucozade. He went, what the fuck are these? And he goes, you said get me out. Fucking meat pie in a bottle, like I said. Well, how am I going to fucking smoke them, you dickhead?
Smoking meat pie. Oh, my fucking days. Jesus Christ. Oh, that guy sounds like the world's biggest fuckwit. The scary thing is, he's probably a fucking
lawyer.
He's probably chief of police for Blackburn now.
Fuck me, man.
Unbelievable.
Anyway, go on. About you.
Pot noodles always remind me of Terminator 2. Because when we were kids, Terminator 2 was on in the pictures. And we had this brilliant idea to all go to the park and pick magic mushrooms and then go back. Because they were disgusting. We got these chicken and mushroom pot noodles, one each.
Mega.
So we got the kettle, threw all the mushrooms in the kettle, boiled the kettle, poured it into everybody's pot noodle, made the pot noodles, ate them, went to the cinema to watch Terminator 2, sitting there watching Terminator 2 completely and utterly off our tits. It was absolutely magical. I remember looking down at my arm like, and I could see all this machinery and was like, I'm a Terminator. It was crazy. And the mad thing is, we totally forgot to wash out the kettle. His mom and daddy was. God only knows what their tea and coffee was like. But the next time I went round the house, they bought a new kettle. You're obviously getting off the tits every morning. But the other fucking, there's something wrong with that kettle. Then it gets you out of it.
Oh, fucking God. Hell.
Yeah. Those, man.
Listen, before we talk fights, the one I was going to go, before I got distracted by thinking about Pot Noodle Boy and meat pie and a can of Lucozade or whatever it was.
Jesus Christ.
Me and Nick share a YouTube channel. Obviously, we have the Fight Disciples YouTube channel. So I'm on there doing the videos, doing the cuts, doing the interview, putting them all up on our YouTube channel. But obviously, Nick has that login.
For Nick's picks?
Yeah, obviously, he's doing his Nick's picks of the weekend, so he needs the login to get in there. Anyway, every now and again, obviously, if you like a video, you like it, if you subscribe to a page, it comes up on your feed. It suggested things that you should be watching. And I thought it was really weird for about 3 months now. Every time I go on our YouTube channel, there's a suggestion to watch or listen to the sound of vacuum cleaning. Video of fighter analysis, fight, vacuum cleaner, fight. I'm like, what the fuck is this? Now that you've just said that this morning about the coffee thing, everything has started to fall into place. Can you please tell me why there are liked pages and favorite pages of the sound of vacuum cleaners on our page?
It's I like to listen to the vacuum when I'm being creative, so it like drowns things out. So it doesn't necessarily put me to sleep, but if I'm writing or if I'm like, you know, writing a column or doing something creative like that, I like to have a vacuum on. And Jane tells me off for burning out vacuums and hair dryers. So what I've discovered is there's a plethora of fantastic 3 and 4 hour long vacuum videos on YouTube. So I just sit and listen to the vacuum while I work. That's perfectly normal. David Beckham and Wayne Rooney both suffer from the same thing, an addiction to white noise. So it's perfectly reasonable. I bet you hundreds and thousands of our listeners do the same thing.
Every year there's something new with you. Just when I thought we've cracked it, just when I thought, I know him inside out, mate. There's some other weird shit that comes out. Okay, now. How the fuck are we here like this? How the fuck? You're fucking weird, mate.
Oh, dear. Oh,
mega.
Anyway, mega. Did you watch any of the funeral yesterday? Did you watch any of...
It was on all day.
Hey, Madge. Did you watch it any was of on... it? Or did you get out and about?
No, I watched it. I watched the majority of it. And then, obviously, at night time, all the repeats were on and all that type of stuff. I actually thought it... Listen, it's a somber, solemn thing to watch, isn't it? A funeral on TV. And many people think that that's weird, sitting in and watching that. But at the end of the day, she is an icon. Or was an icon, should I say. So to kind of just sit there and take it all in, this historical moment. And I actually thought, fuck it. Do you know what I was thinking halfway through it? What, the organisation of that? Fucking insane. Hell.
Honestly, insane. Nobody does pomp and pad. Nobody does that as good as us. Like, no. Pomp and...
We're the best.
All that fucking showmanship, all that stuff is unreal. It was an absolute spectacle to watch, like. But, I was the same. I couldn't get... Yesterday, we just had it on all day, and the kids were going bananas, obviously. And yeah. I was like, no, man. Kids like, we're bored. I'm like, good. I was bored loads when I was a kid. Crack on. Find yourself something to do.
Go and listen to some vacuuming.
Exactly. Yeah, go and entertain yourself. But yesterday, it was like, okay, we've done it now. Brilliant. You know, laid to rest. Fantastic. We showed the world. This is how you do it. Amazing. That's enough now. I read this morning, the royals are now in 6 days of mourning. I'm like, Jesus Christ, how long is this mourning going to go on for? Like, BBC is, let's be honest, it's turned into Mourn Hub, hasn't it? BBC channel, it's just Mourn Hub. For the last 2 weeks, it's been nothing but Mourn Hub. And you're like, come on, give us something. Give us something to raise the spirits a little bit. I'm glad it's done.
Yeah. It feels, mate, listen, we're here. We're creating our normal content. So if you want a little bit of escapism, if you want to go down the normal route of having a laugh, I mean, you've just listened to us talk about fucking burning pot noodles. But we're 15 minutes into this podcast. We've not even mentioned a fight yet. See what I mean?
Yeah.
Normality is back on the Fight Disciples pushing forward. Right then. Vegas at the weekend, the Apex. They feel weird, these shows now, mate. They feel weird. Do you know what I mean? And I know that might just be me thinking, you know, we've been blessed because we've been at shows where there's been big crowds. Obviously, we've experienced a couple in London. We've been to Paris. There's loads coming up that we're going to be experiencing between now and the end of the year. There's nothing like the UFC in front of 15,000 to 20,000 people. There's nothing like it whatsoever. So when they do go back to the Apex, and I know that there is a small crowd in there, it just feels odd. It feels odd now. I know that it was there for a thing of necessity during the pandemic, and we were thankful for it because the show kept going. And without it, we could have been a year, 2 years without any action, of course.
Yeah.
But now it just feels like, come on now. Come on now. You know what I mean? Let's push the boat out and take it into some random gaffs and what have you. There's places all over the world that would absolutely love to welcome the UFC. And I'm sure that that is the plan for 2023. But in the interim period, whilst we're having these shows at the Apex, they just do feel, they don't feel like they know, that, like, in my opinion, that they should feel.
No, and it's not just the atmosphere either. I just think, look at the lineup. You know, let's be honest. This is like a next gen style card, if to use a boxing parlance. This is like a Friday night fights. That's what the Apex fights are starting to feel like. You get three or four names on there that are recognizable UFC vets, guys that have been around a little bit on the card, usually two of them in the main event, one or two sprinkled elsewhere. The rest, like on Saturday night, they may as well have just said for every single fighter, this person was on Dana White's Contender Series last year. This person was on Dana White's Contender Series the year before. This person, it feels like, feeder level UFC. This is not the good stuff. This is the back at the Apex, we're saving a few quid stuff. Everybody is on buttons. Nobody's getting a massive payday. Nobody is what you would call a star name. And I just feel like the 9 or 10 of the fights are fodder fights for early prelim fights for fight nights elsewhere. That's what it's starting to feel like. I'm like, oh, a show from the Apex behind closed doors in Vegas. Okay, I might know two or three of these names, the rest of them. I don't watch Dana White's Contender Series every Wednesday. So this is a new introduction to these people. That's what the Apex events are starting to feel like. Not quite the real show, just a kind of a lower down version. Basically, somewhere between Dana White's Contender Series and the actual UFC are these fight nights at the Apex for me now. And we've got a couple of decent fights here, a couple of good talking points, but I'm like, yeah, man, let's stop doing the Apex shows. Let's get these fight nights back on the road. Let's start putting some real weight behind them and start putting some real money behind them and investing in these fight nights again, because they're starting to feel so many levels below the numbered events. It feels like a different organization almost.
I wonder what the thought process is behind it. Is it because they want to, like the pay-per-views, for example, is it because they want to make them even better? So therefore the people that you would normally feature on these fight nights are then getting boosted into pay-per-view events. So therefore that's the showcase. That's the creme de la creme, the best of the best. But in doing so, then you dilute the other product. Because in my opinion, not everybody can get to the UFC. That was the beauty of it. It was the best of the best. There were still brilliant fighters in Bellator, in ONE Championship, in the PFL, that didn't make it to the UFC because the UFC said no. And in doing this new way of matchmaking, although you might be boosting one half of the business, and I agree, I strongly believe that. I mean, look what we're getting in Abu Dhabi. That card's just fucking silly. Absolutely silly.
Yes.
But then the other half of the business, then the fight nights, especially the ones from the Apex, not the ones that go on the road, but the ones from the Apex, they feel inferior. Missable. And it's quite obvious. It's quite obvious that it's inferior. And that has never been the UFC. It's always been smooth. It's always been a smooth transition from fight nights into pay-per-view events.
Yeah, the fight nights have always had the first sprinkling of proper talent. And as I say, Paris and, you know, Florida and London and a lot of these on the road fight nights, they stand up, absolutely. I'm not criticising them. I just feel like every time there's an Apex fight night now, it's a step below everything else the UFC does. And I think that was evident in this card at the weekend. You know, there's, again, 3-4 actual recognizable names that go, okay, I've seen this guy fight before, know what he's all about, blah, blah, blah. Whereas the rest of the card, it was just like, Dana White Contender Series alumni, Dana White Contender Series alumni. And I'm like, it's weak. It felt weak. It felt like a level below. And, I sped through the prelims. I was like, no interest in these prelim people whatsoever. And then thankfully, I'll be honest, thankfully, the main and the co-main paid off. They were good fights. They were worth watching. I was engaged in them fights. But again, they were probably the most recognisable names. Obviously, they were at the top of the bill.
Yeah. I actually think my enjoyment of the main card in particular was probably brought on because I was staying up to watch Canelo Triple G.
Yes.
So I went through with it. So I watched it all live. You know what I mean? So I watched Anthony Hernandez against Barry Oak, which I thought was a great fight. I thought Hernandez put in a wonderful performance. I thought Joe Pfeiffer as well was good. Who I'm interested in. I know that that's a person from the Contender series, but I've been aware of his story to get to this particular point. So I kind of invested into him. And then, like you said, there's loads of talking points. Feely and Algeo, we'll talk about that, the scoring of that final round. I think we've got an affiliation now with RoboCop, seeing as that he was on our streamed program that we were doing on Tuesday nights, which will be coming back very, very soon. And then, of course, in the main event, we've got two guys there that are proper hot contenders in this particular division. So, listen, I think anything out that wasn't on the main card at the weekend is one of them where you just go, Whereas the main card did have things in there that could stand up on what you would class as a normal fight night. I just hope that this isn't the direction that we're going, because it wasn't broke. It wasn't broke. You don't have to fix it. Just go back to how it was. Take the show on the road. Go to some random places, local areas, local fighters, local time zones, and watch this thing absolutely fly, because the UFC didn't, well, they had it right. They didn't need to change it. Main event obviously gets stopped at the end of the fourth because of a horrific cut on Song Yadong. What my takeaway from it, because it was obvious that fight was going to get stopped at some point after the cut in the second round. You kind of knew we were going in this direction because the doctor's in there every bloody 2 minutes. He's talking to Herb. Herb's going, right, okay, yeah. And then obviously it ends up getting cut. But my takeaway from it is, from a Corey Sandhagen point of view, he's technically brilliant. Technically very, very good, Corey Sandhagen. But more importantly, what I learned from him at the weekend is that he's very calm. Because the majority of people will pounce on that situation, rush their work, maybe walk onto something and get themselves then in trouble. As we kind of saw in the co-main. We kind of saw that in the co-main where Chitty Chitty Bang Bang chased the cut a little bit and then ended up getting done. Whereas Sandhagen didn't do that. He took his time. He kept on doing his work, going through his motions, sticking to his game plan. And I thought that technically he looked very, very good. And obviously you take away that Song Yadong's a fucking tough bastard. He's good, very good, a tough bastard. But just maybe at the moment, and I'm not saying that this is forever, but just at the moment, he's just a touch below the top boys like Corey Sandhagen.
Yeah. What I really like about Sandhagen, you're absolutely right. I think technically Sandhagen's excellent and he's very creative. I think he got a little bit flying knee happy, but then you would do that when you've had success with the flying knee at times. He does throw them a little bit too often. But his spatial awareness is very good. He closes the distance really well. He doesn't rush himself, as you say. And the thing with Sandhagen is he got to the top of the mountain and he fell short. And he's had a couple of defeats against a couple of the best guys in the division. And it would be easy to go away and go, you know what? You know, I'm still icing the guys at the bottom end of the top 10. I'm just coming short against the guys at the top. But my time will come. One day I'll get the roll of the dice. One day I'll land the shot I need to land. I will get where I need to be. But he hasn't done that. He hasn't rested on his laurels. He's left his team. He's joined up with Ryan Spann, who's an absolute nightmare on the ground. So add that element to his game. He's obviously working with Spann and his team. He was in the corner at the weekend. And I think that's really going to add another dimension to his game. But I thought Song Yadong at the weekend was absolutely sensational. That's one of the best I've seen Song Yadong. He's so strong. He proved that in this game, there's the speed that Sandhagen's got, but he doesn't really pack power. Whereas Song Yadong has got the speed, but he's got the power. Now, I think he was unfortunate to get cut. I think the cut from the elbow in the second round really kind of fucked Song Yadong, because at that point, I was like, this fight is on fire. And it completely threw him off the cut. And the cut was a horrific cut. And it wasn't an accident, obviously. It was. I thought at first it was from a head clash. But actually, when they replayed it, it was a lovely little upward elbow from Sandhagen, which cut him open. And again, that's something you learn to do. If you haven't got power in your fist, then you better get handy with your elbows, because you need to be stopping guys and cutting guys up. And that's what Sandhagen does. He's learned to use his skill set. Okay, might not be the biggest puncher, sound, but I'm going to get close enough to hit you with elbows, and elbows hurt a lot more than fists. They certainly cut you up more than fists. So to see Sandhagen evolving in front of our eyes was excellent, because, as again, I thought that version of Song Yadong may well have walked down and beat Sandhagen previously, but I just think Sandhagen has learned from his mistakes, is getting better. Song Yadong is clearly getting better. But as you say, right now, Sandhagen's here, Yadong's there, and he's improving as he's improving, and he's just staying ahead of him at the moment. But I just hope this doesn't break Song Yadong's heart. I hope that cut is able to be, you know, they do a really good job on it, and it doesn't hamper his career moving forward, because moving forward, I genuinely think there's a bantamweight title contender in Song Yadong. I really do. He's just got to refine the edges and just add a little bit more to his game. He's just a little bit predictable with that power 1-2. Just needs to add a couple more extra dimensions, but I think he's got so much talent. This was high-end stuff. Two of the best guys in the world.
Yeah. I think Sandhagen as well should take a lot of confidence, because, listen, I think he beat TJ. I thought he beat him that particular night. And TJ's fighting for a title on Abu Dhabi against Aljo. So that's how close he is. He's very, very, very close, isn't he? You know? And obviously, he's been in with Aljo before, and I know that he got absolutely blown away by Aljo. But you're right in what you're saying. He's learning, he's evolving, he's getting better and better. And he will.
But
be
even Aljo's come out since and said Sandhagen is. I don't know, he might comment at the weekend saying Sandhagen's fucking excellent. I know I'm going to see him again. And he mentioned something about not getting lucky, but he was fortunate to get that finish so early last time.
Yeah.
Not meaning it was a fortunate finish, but he was like,
he was a bit raw.
Himself a tough fight by getting him so early on in the fight. And I think that was cool from Aljo. And he's right. Sandhagen won 100% will be back at that table early next year.
Yeah, man. Which was the worst cut? Song Yadong's or RoboCop's with his third eyebrow?
Yeah. RoboCop's was fucking weird, because it almost split between the two eyes, didn't it? He hit it.
Yeah.
Chidi threw a flying knee and he fucking dived into it. And the cup basically went from the inside of one eye to the other and then a little bit down as well. Really weird position, as you say. Hard to fucking stitch up. But the beauty of that is, judging by, there wasn't too much blood for the size of the cut. And it's going to run down your nose, run down the inside of your nose. It's not going to hamper your eye as much. Whereas Song Yadong's went across the eyebrow, like literally fucking right across there. There was only one place for that blood to go. I think the fact that it even went four rounds, that main event, is testament to the corner work. The cut man in the corner, who did both cuts, by the way, he did Rodriguez and he did Yadong. He earned his dough on Saturday night. I thought he was tremendous, got straight in there with the adrenaline, really pushed that in there, stopped the bleeding on both cuts, allowed both those guys to be able to continue to fight. In fact, it was only when Sandhagen was like, right, get him on the floor and he's well within his rights, started grinding that head in against him on the floor, rubbing his hand and his elbows. That's when you're like, fuck, if he catches that cut with a corner of his glove or even with his head again, it's going to split right down. It's going to make it even worse. I think that's why the referee eventually went, you know what? This is ridiculous. We're going to need to stop it. Whereas Rodriguez, his cut was horrific. But when he come out for that second round, there was no blood there at all. And he'd done such a good job on stopping it temporarily. And I think you're right. It was only the fact that Chidi saw blood and went, right, I'm going after him now, that played into Rodriguez's hands. And mate, what a finish that was. It was a sensational first round, but the finish was fucking brilliant.
I think, as well as obviously Rodriguez having that attitude of never give up and obviously staying in the fight and then doing what he did in the second round, I do think there's an element of Chidi kind of giving up on himself a touch. I think
punched himself out.
Yeah, I think he blasted himself out, had his heart broke. He thought, fuck, I can't get rid of the dude. And then he just went, ah, fuck it.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the end of the fight, which was a little bit disappointing because the first round was brilliant. It was a brilliant first round to watch.
Yeah, well, Mark Smith, the referee, for the start of the second round, like I said, the first round was amazing. The big dudes, so there was plenty of time where they were up against the fence, having a little bit of a breather. Absolutely no shame in that when you're putting in the work they were doing. Get to the end of the round, the cut's getting worked on. Mark Smith comes out, and you can see he's looking, going on. And all he was doing was, he wasn't even watching the fight, he's just looking at Rodriguez's head, looking at that cut going. And you can see in his mind, he's like, should this be going on? What does it look like on TV? How bad is it really? How much blood is he losing? And it was fortunate that the only time it kind of opened up was after Rodriguez got that hip toss in through threw Chidi on his back and jumped on top of his back. And then once Chidi got up on all fours and he was just rolling punches, you're right. It was like Nujikani just kind of went. He didn't roll onto his back to try and stop anything. No. He didn't try and get him in guard.
He had enough.
He just basically turtled up, yeah, and had enough, which for him must be disappointing. But I think he rolled the dice in that first round, start the second round. And, you know, RoboCop just got stronger, didn't he? He didn't give a fuck that his skull was hanging out of his head. He was just like, I ain't getting beat by you, motherfucker. And just his will overcame the will of Chidi. And that's, listen, we had a chat with Rodriguez, one of the fucking nicest guys we spotted. Like, loads of these Brazilian big guys are super nice, but he's right out of the Glover Teixeira fucking lovely Brazilian fucking book. What a guy. What a win for him as well, man. Massive win, that. Massive.
Really big. Really big win. Little bit further down that main card, you had Andre Touchy-Feely, one of the best nicknames in the game, against Bill Algeo, who's got a really weird style. Is Algeo. Like, yeah. you watch.
Is it a bit Wonderboy-esque?
But it's like
he doesn't bounce on his toes like Wonderboy, but he goes completely like side on. There's no square on his shoulders at all, which makes it hard to throw shots around. It's a weird style.
It is it's a very, very weird style. And I think as we enter the third round, the general consensus from all the judges, they were all in agreement. And I think the majority of people watching it at home had it won a piece. You're going into the final round. Here we go. Let's have it. Last 5 minutes. Who's going to go and win this fight? And this is where understanding unified scoring criteria really, really comes into play. Because there's genuine... We end up with a split decision. And the split decision goes in favour of Andre.
This is going to be interesting, kids. Hold on to your hats. This is going to be interesting.
Okay. So you have a split decision in favour of Andre Feely. But Andre Feely's upset with the split decision because obviously one of the judges did score the last round in favour of Bill Algeo. Now, for those that haven't seen the fight, what happens is that Andre Feely takes Bill Algeo's back, has him in a body lock, and he is...
Take down. He takes him down. Sorry, yeah, he doesn't. Yeah, he takes him down.
Change of position. I'm talking from a scoring point of view. All right.
Then he takes puts a body triangle on. Yeah.
Right. So he has his back body triangle on, and he has what is it? Three attempts. Three attempts at it? Three attempts at a rear naked choke. Okay. So if you're looking all the while, by the way, you have got Bill Algeo, who is obviously in. The triangle, and obviously having to defend those rear naked chokes. All the while, he then, from a position of defense, is punching Andre Feely in the head. And those punches are hard, vicious punches, of which cause damage, visible damage. You can actually see cuts opening up on Andre Feely's head. However, just wait before you start mourning. I'm going to tell you what the fucking shit is, all right? Calm down. Now, we obviously end up with a split decision. So therefore, the judge that has scored this in favour Algeo, in Algeo's favour in that final round, has obviously put prominence on the punches, the strikes. Because he's if you look at the stats, he has comfortably outlanded Andre Feely in that third round because of the shots that he's throwing from the position that he's throwing him in. However, effective striking, yes. Effective grappling has to be taken into consideration. Where is the fight-ending scenario? That's the first question that you should ask yourself. Where's the fight-ending scenario? Is Andre Feely at any point wobbled out on his feet in the cusp of getting finished? The answer to that question, I can say 95% certainty, is no. He's getting whacked in the mush. Of course he is. And he's taking hard, effective strikes. Nobody's debating that. But the most effective moments in that particular round are the effective grappling moments that Andre Feely has on Bill Algeo. He attempts at least three rear naked chokes. He has one of them on solid. He has one of them on solid. Fair play to Algeo for getting out of it and fighting that. But that's his job. His job is to do that. Defend yourself at all times. You've got to reward the offensive, the effective striking. So I can understand why Touchy-Feely is a little bit touchy-feely, see what I've done there, about the scoring of that final round with it coming out as a split decision, because he had at least one, maybe multiple, fight-ending scenarios of which should have been scored more prominently than the strikes from bottom.
Yeah, I agree. I think the conversation, the debate about it, and I'm sure this debate will move on, and hopefully it'll be something that gets picked up by, because we have a referee judges rules meeting with Emma every month, and I'm hoping Dan Mozzavedi and the guys throw this one in there, because I'd love to hear professional take on it as well. But the conversations coming out of it from Al Jao's side of things was, we were landing strikes, and we were comfortable in that position. We were landing strikes. At no point was the rear naked on to the point where,
I agree with that.
The referee was closing in, looking for the tap. He was able to fight that arm. It's strange how Feely didn't really maneuver his arm into the right position to really get that choke on. But the counter argument to that is the fact that Al Jao was in a position he didn't want to be in. Regardless of what he says, he would have give you anything to not be locked in a body triangle, facing the ceiling, and throwing blind shots over his shoulder. Hopeful shots. Hopeful a landing. That wasn't intelligent striking. It was reactive defensive striking.
No. I'm not having that. It was. He knew exactly where his head was, and he was whacking it. I think the striking was sound.
What I would say is, Feely could easily have moved his head to this side, but he didn't. He stayed in that position. Why? Because the strikes were doing fuck all. The strikes weren't hitting him. Otherwise, if the strikes were actually hitting Andre Feely, he'd have moved position. Because he was in full control of that position. He was in full control of where that fight is happening there and then. So if those strikes were doing any damage whatsoever, I reckon Feely would have let go, would have done something, would have moved his position if it was bothering him. He didn't. He stayed in that exact position. He carried on looking for that choke. He carried on locking in the body triangle, knowing full well that he was in control of that round. So I don't think the Al Jao's argument really stands up, because those strikes, those blind strikes over your shoulder, They're doing nothing then. You got your chin tucked in, you're fucking fighting for the fight ending scenario. Those blind strikes over your shoulder, I don't think he was getting cuffed from them. I think that was bits of blood that were from the fights previously. I don't think he was getting hair from them strikes whatsoever. If he's got a light migraine the following morning, I'd have been surprised. There was no damage being done there. I don't think it was any question, in my opinion, that it wasn't Feely's round. But again, I'm looking forward to hearing the counter arguments, because it was Feely was in complete control of where that fight was taking place. If he was getting hit, he'd have changed position. He didn't.
I 75% agree with you, because I think the strikes were doing damage. I really do. And I think that they should be scored as such. But my first thought is to go towards a fight-ending scenario.
Yeah, but at no point did you go, the rear naked's on.
No.
It was close. He had one arm under his chin at one point, but he didn't have the other arm in to cinch in the lock. So at no point was it actually
looking
like it was going to end the fight.
So if we're talking about fight-ending scenarios, right?
Yeah.
Feely was closer to a fight-ending scenario than Al Jao.
You can't say closer, though. Was it happening or not?
It's only because he didn't change his hand position. He'd have finished. I don't know why he didn't finish the fight. He could have finished the fight if he'd have changed his hand position.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that?
I agree. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I don't understand the nuances of a BJJ well enough to say he should have done this exactly. And Andre Feely's a very experienced fighter. So for whatever reason, he couldn't finish off that rear naked choke. So the argument then is, if it wasn't a true fight ending scenario because he never made the final move, was it because Al Jao was holding that right hand, pinning it down, and landing shots? In which case, there's a strong argument then that Al Jao should have won the round.
I think there is an argument for it. I disagree with the argument. I disagree with it. I went the other way. I went for Feely.
Me too.
But I can understand the argument.
Mm-hmm. And anyway, this is the beauty of the unified rules as well.
There you go. See, we're on the same page now. Go.
It isn't. It's never going to be black and white. It's still a fight, and there's still an element of a judge's interpretation. But at least there's a blueprint, which is why we're always upset in boxing. There is no one blueprint. At least there's a blueprint, and there's a conversation now that is judges, officials, everyone can actually have and go, right, that's why. Okay, that's why. I'm open to both interpretations.
Of course.
So, yeah.
Anyway. And this is the thing. This is the kind of where I was at
obviously, we've spoken about judging again in our boxing show about what happened in the Canelo Triple G fight, and we've spoken about that in the previous two fights between those two guys. What having a unified rules criteria does do, it doesn't eradicate debate. It doesn't eradicate, well, I believe this and I believe that, but you are working towards a blueprint. What it does eradicate is idiots.
Yeah.
People that have absolutely no idea what they're talking about, because the unified rules, the sheet of paper that you've got in front of you, you justify your argument to the sheet of paper. Yeah. So your interpretation of significant strikes or fight-ending scenarios with effective grappling, it's there for you. You then you submit your argument forth. And then fans can understand the sport better. They can accept the opposing opinion. That's key, absolutely key. Whereas right now in boxing, you can't accept the opposing opinion because it's not based on anything. It's just, that's all it is. There's no facts backing it up. In this scenario, there is facts backing it up.
Let's be honest. It's not necessarily eradicating the idiots. It's eradicating that word, corruption. That's what it does. Well, it eradicates corruption. There you go. There we go. Pfeiffer.
Right, best of the rest.
What a knockout.
Mate, this guy's... I love this guy. And I, obviously, you kind of fall for him a little bit because you know about his backstory. If you've kept up with Joe Pfeiffer...
Amazing.
And you've heard of his story, it's horrific. It's movie stuff, right? It is a movie script. But for him to now be in the UFC off the back of the Contender Series, to hear nice tales off the back of what he said, like Dana White sorted him out with a house and all this type of stuff so he can train and work for the next year and all this... And then he gets inside the octagon and he performs like he performed. Can't help but root for the dude. He comes across a really nice lad. He's got a good chat about him, but he can fucking fight, mate. He can fight. I saw his Contender Series efforts and I saw what he did at the weekend. This dude ain't going to be on the apex much longer because fans are going to warm to him. His story's wicked. He'll be on some decent fight nights in front of a big crowd very, very soon. And he's marketable. They need to jump on him right now and shove him into people's living rooms.
Yeah, they just got to be, you got to be careful with him as well, because Amadovsky is absolutely wank.
Oh,
let's be honest, guys had four fights in the UFC and been chinned every time. I think I got no.
You want some analysis, ladies and gentlemen? Nick Pete will give you analysis. Yeah,
I ain't gonna lie. There's not many fighters in the UFC that are poor. Certainly in the men's divisions that you would class as poor. He's one of them. No idea why he's only here for people like Joe Pfeiffer, who Dana loves to have those vital moments. So, but he won't be here for much longer. I'll tell you that right now. He was awful, absolutely awful.
One man that looked really good and a lot less fluffy is Anthony Hernandez.
Yes,
looks like he's taking his strength and conditioning into. Serious mode. He's like I said, his nickname's Fluffy. He's a lot less fluffy around the edges. He looked wicked shape wise, and then his performance against Barrio, who is a top fighter, was brilliant, mate. He beat him in his own game for large percentages of that particular fight, and then he dogged it out.
Call Barrio. They call him the Energy Bar or something, don't they?
Something like that, yeah.
Barrio's nickname is Energy Bar, and that Hernandez just fucking absolutely outfought him, outrashed, you name it, outthought him, battered him, yeah. Set a tempo that the Energy Bar couldn't live with. He was brilliant, Hernandez.
Yeah, he was. Anthony Hernandez was great. And I know that at the start of this, we did say, this is maybe a level down from your normal fight night. The main card was good. There's lots of good stuff on that main card, and that's probably where we'll start when we're talking about the actual fights. Anthony Hernandez's performance against Barrio is well worth having a look. Go and have a look at the final round of Touchy Feely against Algio. Tell us how you scored it. And of course, if you want to see some nasty cuts where people's eyebrows are flapping all over the gaff, go and watch the co-main and main event, sickos. One final thing from Vegas at the weekend. When is Aspen Ladd going to move up in weight? I'm getting fed up of it now.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah.
Now, I know that there's studies going into female weight cutting and water retention and all those types of things. I know that. So I don't want to go too harsh. But three failures at 135 now. Sarah McCann is sat there. She's done her job. She's hit the scale. She's ready for a fight. And then because of a ridiculous weight cut from Aspen Ladd, where she misses again, the fight's off and Sarah McCann
you know, can't go and put into practice the weeks and weeks and weeks of training to go and fight at the apex. I've no doubt that she got looked after financially, but that's not the point. If you're booking a fight, your first job is to obviously hit the scales, contracted weight, tick that off, and then turn up for fight night. Three times now, Aspen Ladd's not done that. She must now be forced to move up. You're not fighting at 135 no more, kid. Yeah. You're going to go and play at 145. End of.
That's three times a fight with Sarah McMahon's fallen through as well. All three occasions, nothing to do with Aspen Ladd. I don't know what's going on there, but she's got serious issues, and they need to look into it. I don't know whether it's a medical thing, so I don't know, jump all over. The worst thing is Aspen Ladd can fight, man. The reason she keeps getting these opportunities is because she's super talented, you know, and the UFC realized that they've got this real talent. The problem is she's clearly not a 135er. She must be a 145er. There's clearly some kind of issue, whether it's a medical issue, whether it's an issue about self-control, whether she's just not good at weight cutting, whether her body just doesn't respond well to cutting weight, whatever it may be. She needs to move up a weight division. Like Gunnar Nelson never cut weight. Gunnar Nelson fought at 170, probably could have gotten down to 155 if he wanted to, if he was willing to do things that other fighters to do, but he didn't. And Gunny probably walked around at about 185 max. And she needs to just, if she wants to compete in this sport, she needs to go to 145. I know there's not a lot of action at 145. I know it's a division that existed just for Chris Cyborg and now exists just for the champion. There's a handful of girls who would say are 145ers. But Aspen Ladd, she goes to 145. She wins a fight. She'll probably get a title shot at 145 anyway. So I just don't get it. I just don't get.
I just don't like seeing her on the scale, mate, like she is. No. She comes out, she gets on them scales, she's all over the place. You're thinking, that's not fucking... What's the team sending her out like that for, man? Exactly. You can see it.
Exactly. Her body just clearly doesn't respond well to cutting weight in whichever manner she is doing it. Now, whether the PI... Listen, the PI are probably involved. They've probably given all the advice she probably needs. They've probably looked at her and gone, yeah, she can do 135. We've looked at her body to fat and bone percentages. She can do 135. Sound okay, let's do it. Here's your meal plan. Here's this, here's that. But for whatever reason, whether it's anxiety, whether it's, you know, as you approach the fight, she's holding on to more water. Maybe she's slipping away and having the odd, you know, cheeseburger. I don't know. But there's obviously a clear issue there with her making weight. So why ask her to do it? Stop asking her to do it. Or let her go. She's had so many chances now. It's such a shame.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Listen, there's no UFC this week to preview, but that doesn't stop us talking about all the other talking points that have come our way over the last 7 days. There are fights that have been made, of which we will obviously relay on to you and get excited about. But there's a couple of other pieces of news as well that have come out this week. Of course, we're going to talk about Jose Aldo in a minute. But first of all, the sad news that Elias Theodorou, the Canadian fighter at 34 years of age, lost his battle with cancer. Obviously, a tough winner previously. He never told anybody, or never made it public, should I say, about his battle with cancer, of which he sadly lost last week at the age of 34. I never had the situation where I was sat in a one-on-one interview with Elias, or whether it be over a Zoom call or something like that. But I have been around him in fight weeks, and my lasting memory of him is, what a handsome bastard, right?
I was going to say exactly the same thing.
And what a smile, man. Just always positive. Always positive. Had a massive smile on his face consistently. Always polite. I know that he didn't know my name. I know he didn't know who I were, but just dead polite fella. And a hell of a bloody mixed martial artist. You know what I mean? You can't take to this sport in your 20s, late 20s, and become the ultimate fighter. We in a period of, what is it, 4 years or something like that? He did it. It was just a phenomenal ride. And okay, he didn't get to become a UFC champion or get to the top. But at the end of the day, I watched a video the other day from our good pal, Aaron Bronstetter, obviously the Canadian reporter. And I think he nailed the legacy of Elias, where he's talking about, what's the word I'm looking for? exemption
for therapeutic use exemption.
That's it. The exemptions, yeah, the therapeutic use exemption of marijuana, of which will be his lasting legacy, because he's kind of opened the door and paved the way for other fighters now to obviously get those therapeutic use exemptions, of which he was a massive advocate for, and he will forever be remembered for his work that he did in that field.
Yeah, again, the piece by Aaron, which is on his social medias, was really nice and really touching, as you could expect. He had a personal relationship with him, and he probably pays tribute better than we ever could. But, you know, I think above all else, he was a fighter, man. He was a martial artist, a true martial artist. He left the UFC after getting beat by Derek Brunson, I think it was. But he went 9-3 in his UFC career, as you say, winning tough after just a couple of years in the sport. And the type of fella that the opportunities came along. I know he did a lot of modeling as well. He did some pretty high-end brands, catwalk stuff. And he could have just done that and made a fortune. And yet he, you know, was a martial artist. He wanted to continue to compete in this sport when you're putting your livelihood, i.e. his face, his kite, on the line every time he got inside the fucking ropes with these monsters throwing everything at him. And yet he loved it. And that's why he did it. So for that reason, you know, he should always be remembered fondly. Was always a brilliant ambassador for the UFC, for the sport in general. Continued to compete in MMA back in Canada after he got released by the UFC. Had a couple of fights towards the end of his career. But also he will be remembered for the fun guy that he was as well. He had like a wicked personality. And I think that is probably highlighted most by the fact that he used to carry the ring cards for Invicta Fighting Championships, which is the women-only fighting championships Elias would strip off and carry the ring cards around. So that also should be remembered and noted, because I think that's fucking hilarious and brilliant, you know. And I think he kind of shone a light on that kind of the world as well, that kind of spectrum of fight sports and how ludicrous it is sometimes. But I think he's going to go down in history as a guy that made real change, weirdly, not inside the octagon but outside of it. And I think a lot of fighters from here on in will be able to look back and look at the fact that he brought that in. And what Aaron flags up, and I don't want to take anything away, please go and watch Aaron's tribute because it's lovely. But what he highlighted was the fact that to get that therapeutic use exemption for marijuana, he had to first take every other type of painkiller and prove to the whichever, you know, commission it was, that the marijuana was a better pain relief for him and his issues. I think he had issues with his hands, than all these other pharmaceutical drugs, which is above and beyond anybody. But he was a real advocate, and he got it through. He got it changed, and he changed sport forever.
He did. Other news this week before we move on to fights that have been made is, of course, it's not come officially. I've just been checking his social media. It hasn't come from his social media, but it's come from his management. It's widely reported from Brazil and various other respectable outlets that the boy from Brazil that became the King of Rio is calling time on his mixed martial arts career. Remarkably, only 35 still. Still only 35 years of age is Jose Aldo, and for many the best featherweight of all time. And the reason why we wanted to flag him up and talk about him on the show today is because there'll be a lot of people that listen to our stuff that when we say the name Jose Aldo, you think of 13 seconds, and that's it. That's all you think about. He is much more than that. And if anything, you should look at that 13 seconds against Conor McGregor and then admire what came after it. Of course, you need to know what came before it, but admire what came after it, because he did not let that 13 seconds define him. He continued. No. He kept putting himself in the fire. And although there was defeats following McGregor, there was also real touches of legacy defining moments. And although there wasn't a championship at another weight, he went and regained his featherweight championship, but there wasn't a championship at another weight, he will still, without any shadow of a doubt, go into the Hall of Fame and be discussed amongst the all-time greats. And I'm not over-egging that. All-time greats, the best to ever do it, the people that changed the game, Jose Aldo, 100%, is one of those guys. You ready for a history lesson? Here comes Nick.
Well, back in, you know, there was a period there when he was undefeated for 10 years. He lost the fight very early in his career on Jungle Fights, and then he went under. He went like 25-1, and on that journey before he ran into Conor McGregor, literally. But on that journey, he was like, you know, undisputed champion in the WEC before the UFC even had a lightweight division, a featherweight division, before the little guys crossed over to the UFC. Then the UFC bought WEC and he amalgamated them in. And of course, they just upgraded him straight away to UFC champion. And his reign just continued from there. He was absolutely untouchable. And his striking, you know, remains some of the best striking we've seen in the little divisions. His leg kicking was notoriously the best in the whole sport. His, bizarrely enough, he came from a jiu-jitsu Lucha Libre background as well. You know, people don't realize, people think he's a Thai boxer by trade because of how sensational his stand-up was. But he actually came to the sport. There's, in fact, there's an amazing documentary out there. It's called Stronger Than the World. And it's obviously a Brazilian movie. It's a documentary and it's about Jose Aldo's life. Last time I seen it, it was on Netflix. Go and find it. It's fucking amazing. It's a cracking movie. Gives you the full journey. How as a kid, he rolled over. He was playing. He rolled into a family barbecue, which is how he got that big scar right down his face, hence his nickname Scarface. Right through how he almost became a footballer. Now he chose fighting. How he lived in the gyms. Very similar story to so many of these Brazilians. But it was jiu-jitsu first, and then he fell in love with striking, with the Thai boxing side of the game. And then that's why his takedown defense, you know, even to this day, remains some of the best takedown defense we've ever seen from any fighter. And that is based on the fact he's got this incredible jiu-jitsu base, which he then put a Thai striking thing on top. To reinvent himself, you know, to be the best featherweight in the world for a decade, and then to reinvent himself at featherweight after the loss to Conor, then to move down to bantamweight, which initially looked horrific, but actually, you know, it was probably his proper weight division, as he's proven now, and to remain one of the best guys in the world to this day, you know, to retirement, he's one of the top five guys in the world at bantamweight. 2009-2010 World MMA Awards, I remember, I think it might have been 2009 World MMA Awards. He was the best fight. He was crowned the best fighter on the planet. 2010, he was in the mix as well. Around that period, it was 11, 12 years ago, he was the best fighter walking the earth. He was the pound-for-pound number one guy. He was, in my opinion, Volkan. And he's still here now. 10 years later, he's fucking still here. You show me another fighter that 10 years... John Jones doesn't count because he's been out for so long. That has not stopped fighting. And a decade later, remains one of the best guys in the world. It's absolutely phenomenal how Jose is able to continue to compete at this level. And I finally got to, I've spoken to Didi Pedernera, as head coach, many times about him. I finally got the chance to sit down and do a one-on-one with Jose out in Salt Lake City prior to ultimately what was his last fight as well. And that was an absolute honor. You know, the BT Sport team will vouch for the fact that of all the interviews that week, and I had some crackers, Jose Aldo was the one I was nervous for, but you know, when a Hall of Fame legend walks into the room, you know it, because in the back of your mind you're like, "Fuck me, son, you're a pioneer in this game. You're one of the guys that made this entire sport what it is." And I think that was probably testament when he made the ring walk in Salt Lake City, and the place went absolutely fucking mental for a Brazilian taking on, you know, okay. Eastern European, but Mirab's based in New York. You know, he's lived there for over a decade. And they announced him from New York via whatever, and no one give a fuck. Everyone was there supporting Jose Aldo because Fight Fans Knowledge knows what this guy has done for the game. So, yeah, Didi Pedernera's, who 10 years ago said to me, yeah, Jose's going to retire now. When he retires, I'm retiring. He finally gets to retire now because he's been waiting for a fucking decade to hang his gloves up himself, his mitts up. So yeah, nothing but love and respect for Jose, that entire team. What a guy, man. What a fucking guy.
Can you remember the first time you saw him?
Mine was
someone sent it me. It was is it 7 seconds, 8 seconds on Cub Swanson? That double flying knee thing?
Yes. WEC fight title defense.
Mate, that was the first time I went, what the fuck is this? And bear in mind, he was already well into his career by that point. So therefore, it just goes to show how much traction the smaller dudes do get. For it to take to that particular point
to come to the forefront of a person that's working in the industry's mind.
Yeah.
He was a pioneer. He was an absolute game changer. He, for the smaller guys, was the trailblazer. I know that other people might bring up Demetrius Johnson's name and various other names. And they're all well and worthy to be brought up into this conversation. But Jose Aldo was the fucking dude, mate. Trust me. He was the dude. I'm actually really looking forward to seeing what Connor says about him. Because yeah. I know that they are obviously intertwined by that 13 seconds of madness. Of course. Connor, obviously, one fight fell off, didn't it? And then just this unbelievable rise of Conor McGregor kind of intertwined with the 13 seconds with Jose Aldo. But I know, because he's a mixed martial artist deep down, Conor will have something profound to say about him, because that dude is the fucking guy. Trust me, Jose Aldo's a guy. And like what you've just said there about when you interview someone like that, of that stature, it actually blows you away how normal they are.
Yeah, I know, yeah. Absolutely. It
blows you away. Like, he's superstar shit, but he's such a normal dude.
Yeah, absolutely. Turns up exactly when he's supposed to turn up for his interview, gives you exactly what you want him to give you, complete professional. And just on that point, that first fight with Cub Swanson was actually a title eliminator WEC, and it was, just listen to this run, beats Cub Swanson, 8 seconds, flying knee knockout, gets a title fight against Mike Brown, knocks out Mike Brown, goes straight into a fight with Uriah Faber, wins that, beats Manny Gamborian knockout, beats Mark Hominick, beats Kenny Florian, beats Chad Mendes, beats Frankie Edgar, beats Korean Zombie, then Ricardo Lamas, and then Chad Mendes. That was his run right into Conor McGregor. There's no make weight in that. There's no easy fight in any of them.
And all different styles. All different styles.
That's what I mean about Jose Aldo changing the game. At that point in time, in that run, around that 2009, 2010, 2011 period, as the WEC transitioned into the UFC, he was the fucking best mixed martial artist on planet Earth, bar none.
There you go, man.
Decade later, he was still doing it. Fucking unreal. Unreal.
And do you know something? He's the type of dude, you won't see him again. It's mad, isn't it?
Yeah.
You probably won't see him again. You might see him pop up at a Brazil card or something like that.
Well, we'll see him at the fucking... We'll see him in a green jacket at the Hall of Fame presentation, because I tell you now, he's a first ballot. He will go. Doubt. He's Hall of Fame first ballot. No ifs, no buts, no maybes.
No doubt. I hope he's not a stranger, mate, because he's got an infectious grin when he does give it you, when he's not staring me coldly backstage because he's just had a horrific weight cut, something like that. But he's an infectious character, and I really hope that he does stick around and we get to see him every now and again.
And that movie, again, it's called Stronger Than the World. Search for it on Netflix. It's a Portuguese movie, obviously, but it's in Portuguese language, but you can get translation. It's wicked.
Now, this kind of intertwines nicely, because we were lucky enough to be there when Joseph fought Marlon Moraes. I think that was his first step down to bantamweight. I think it was. And then he ended up getting a bad... For many people, he got a bad one on the cards. I saw the value in Marlon Moraes winning that particular fight, but a lot of people thought that Jose won that fight. The reason why I'm bringing up Marlon Moraes' name is because, as you know, we thought he'd retired. We thought he'd gone. But no, he's back now because he got a call from the PFL. Marlon Moraes is going into the PFL. You know how highly we think of the PFL. To see him, and it's going to be interesting to see what weight he goes in at. But a fabulous addition. PFL, not messing about, signing the very best fighters in the world. I still believe Marlon Moraes is one of the very best fighters in the world. He just needs to go and re-find himself. He needs to find out something between his ears isn't working right now, whether it's a belief thing or whatever. Technically, he's fucking magic, Marlon Moraes, and I think he'll be a great asset to the PFL.
It's just interesting, as you say, the big conversation there. Sorry, just to come back to the weight. Haven't had a good chat with Brendan Loughnane about it. That's the key. You can't just go into the PFL the same weight you are in the UFC or in Bellator, because you've got to make that weight every 4 months.
You've got to stay there.
For 12 months, because you've got to have a quarterfinal, a semi-final, a final, hopefully. And you can't miss that date. And you've got to be on weight. And you've got to get your head around the fact that you need to make weight on these series of dates. And he said that's the most difficult thing.
I think he could go to feather.
Yeah. I think you could go to feather as well.
So, Brendan, if you want to fight with Marlon Moraes, bring that to the UK, man. I'm well in for it.
Yeah, fucking right. Yeah, absolutely.
A couple of other fights that have been made. I will do these back to front. So in December, you're going to see Jared Cannonier against Sean Strickland. Listen, I'm all for it. We've been speaking about the middleweight division. We know where the middleweight division's going. We know what the title fight is. We spoke last week about bringing Hamzat into 185, fighting Paulo Costa and maybe throwing him forward to, or the winner of that, back towards the title fight following Izzy versus Pereira. The guys that have had their shot in Cannonier, I say Strickland, but he's been a contender. He's been there or thereabouts. Obviously, he fell short last time out against Pereira. It is basically the losers of those two champions going forward, obviously fighting each other. I'm all for it. It's a top contender fight. I think it'll be a decent knock. Both guys like to throw hands. One of them speaks an incredible amount of shit. One of them's incredibly polite and down to earth and very, very nice. Yep. So I think they'll make a nice little oil, water type of mix on December the 17th. Coming into November, check this out for a battle. Bryce Mitchell, Thug Nasty, Mosvar Evloev.
Ooh.
Wow. Wow.
That's a good fight.
Wow.
That's a good fight. What card's that on, dude?
November the 5th. November the 5th is when that's the week before the Izzy pay-per-view. So Bryce Mitchell and Mosvar Evloev are going to be going at it. A phenomenal mixing styles. You know what Bryce wants to do? Bryce wants to
good for
like
the doll. It's too good for the Apex, that. That's too good for the Apex. Fuck me.
Mosvar Evloev, obviously an elite wrestler, but he's proven on a couple of occasions as well that he likes his hands too. That's a great fight.
Yeah, it is. It is.
You can tell you can tell it's a good fight when I can actually feel your balls tingling from here, mate.
Yeah. Evloev's the real deal, man. There's no ifs, no buts, no maybes. He's fucking absolutely legit. But Bryce Mitchell is undefeated as well, man. Two undefeated guys going at it. That's got to be the main event of that fight night. That's an absolute fucking belter of a fight. I love it.
Mm. Week before, on October the 29th, Calvin Cater's got himself an opponent. Calvin Cater's opponent is Triple A himself. That's right. Arnold Allen. This is the one that we've been thirsty for. We know we know that Arnold Allen, obviously, after a fantastic performance at UFC London back in March, he bust his hands up. So he's had to wait for his hands to heal. We would have loved to have seen him maybe on the second London card, but he was still healing up, still getting himself fit. And I suppose at the stage that he's currently at, with the ranking that he currently holds, he's got to wait for the right guys now. He can't be fighting down. He's got to be fighting up. We're shooting towards the title. Calvin Cater, Arnold Allen, is an outstanding fight. Outstanding fight. Two dudes who just love to have it. This will be amazing fight, mate.
Yeah, listen, I agree with you. I think it's an amazing fight, and it gets Arnold, you know, one step higher in the rankings. I think Calvin Cater's 5 and he's 6. And Arnold needs these opportunities now, as you say. He needs to be moving forward. We need to see him closing in on a featherweight title shot. The top of the division's been locked down for a little bit too long, and he needs fresh blood there. The alarm bell now goes off about the fight the week after. Because two undefeated guys in the featherweight division going at it. Then the week before, you've got Arnold Allen versus Calvin Cater. If I'm Evloev, I'm calling out the winner of this fight straight away, because you're on the same training schedule. You're on a similar pattern. If everyone comes through, you know, relatively unscathed, I could see this being a fight early in 2023. And, you know, in terms of Arnold, I want to see Arnold get a title shot on Evloev. Like Arnold, looks like a future world champion. So that's a fucking absolutely insane fight for next year. I'll be honest, I was hoping Arnold Allen get a win over Calvin Cater. Then we get our boy Arnold Allen title opportunity on the undercard of Leon Edwards versus Kamaru in London in March. That was what I was hoping for. Big stadium show in London, big event, maybe even the O2 London. Leon Edwards main event against the main man, Kamaru Usman, in a trilogy fight. And then Arnold Allen versus Volkanovski as chief support. That's what I was praying for. But now you've said Evloev is fighting the week after. Mate, I think the winner of this fights the winner the week after, I'm telling you.
Either way, you've got two amazing fights in featherweight. Yeah. In featherweight there. Two amazing, amazing fights. Delighted for Arnold, because we speak about it all the time. But MMA and fight sports in general comes into two things, isn't it? It's what you do inside the octagon and it's what you do on that microphone. You've got to make people resonate with you. Now, we know Arnold. We're lucky enough to know him. So that's maybe why we speak so highly of him. He's got a wicked personality. He's a funny bastard. He's a mad fucker, but he's a funny, funny dude. Loads of banter about him. And he can fight. You know he can fight. You're a fan. You've seen him. You know what he does. Maybe other people in this division have had opportunities before him because they're a little bit more gobby. You know what I mean? And they resonate maybe more so with that American audience. You beat Calvin Kattar, you're in. You're in the fucking mix because Calvin Kattar's no joke. We've seen him bounce back from a severe beating with Max Holloway and his performances have been absolutely outstanding. So I'm really looking forward to this, mate. This could be an absolute belter of a fight.
Yeah, man.
There you go. No UFC to preview this week. You're having a week off, kids. Week off. Don't worry, though. It bounces back the week after with some real quality, of which we'll get stuck into on next Monday's show. Thank you very much for listening to us. Absolute pleasure, as always. You can get this on YouTube. It's just next to the vacuum cleaner noises, if you want to click on that.
And just below the how you make instant coffee video. Correct.
Fight Disciples is what you're looking for on YouTube. You're also looking for that if you want the audio feed on iTunes as well. Fight Disciples. Fightdisciples.com is our website for everything else, including Spotify and various other little bits. And we're on social media, so keep up to date. If you need any links for anything, I'll stick it on the Instagram stories so you can just click it and get stuck straight in. Enjoy your week. We'll catch you next time.
Thank you for listening. If you like what you heard, subscribe via iTunes.